Welcome to the Draft Doctors Fantasy Footy Podcast with your hosts, John Crockett, Steve Fizz, and the Statesman.
Welcome to the Draft Doctors. We'll be talking all things forward rankings on the show, going through our top 30 for the Dream Team AFL Fantasy formats of your drafts. Steve and Jono have the Supercoach side of things covered. Make sure you listen to both pods. They've been pretty different so far, so it's definitely good to check out both. I'm Doss, and joining me is a man who's already hot and sweaty, not due to the weather, but from thinking about the amount of Geelong to be featured on this episode. I can confirm he's already half-mast. It's the third McLaughlin brother, Cam.
G'day, mate. To be honest, I was going to do this one naked, and then I just thought, you know, if you already know I'm half-mast, why show the world? But second, hey, do we have a theme song? Because I feel like we need one. We need a Doss and Cam, and don't forget Statesman, everyone's least favourite guy. Or something, you know?
Going away from the Americanized intro then, there, Cam?
Yeah.
Welcome to the Draft Doctors Fantasy Footy Podcast with your host, Doss Kenny, Cam McLaughlin, and the Statesman. I might edit that into the start,
<That's>
actually. The Statesman is here as well. How's things in Tassie?
G'day, Doss. How are you going? Fuck off, Cam.
All right, let's get into the show then. Just quickly, relating to last week's defender rankings, did your rankings change much following the official announcement regarding the rules, Cam?
No, not at all. So I factored that into my rankings going into it, so pretty much the same.
Yeah, and yours, Statesman, you factored in as well. We weren't sure last week when we recorded if it was going to be, you know, plus one, plus three, whatever. So Champion Data have announced that it will be plus three when they're outside of the square, and you sort of factored that in already as well, didn't you, Statesman?
Yes, I did. I'm sure we're going to be cursing this a few times throughout the year because you'll be losing matchups depending on how many times Luke Ryan stepped out when he kicked from a point kick in. So I will say that we're still up for a lot of questions. We're still going to see a fair bit of what happens with strategy from the coaches. I think we're right with the pace and the good kickers, but let's see how it plays out in the first six rounds.
And moving on to the show at hand, forwards. So there are actually a couple of rules as well that potentially help mainly key forwards. There's now essentially zones, while they've also altered the hands in the back rule to be far less strict when players are just placing their hands rather than clearly pushing. Do we think rules here are going to be very crucial for the fantasy format? Cam, you got any takes on that?
No hot ones, to be honest. Like, I'm still going into the forwards with my old, try and get the dual positions first, because they generally spend more time in the mid. I think that's where the better scores will come from. You might see a minor bump in key forwards, but for me, I still try and avoid key forwards where possible.
Yeah. All right, well, let's get to the ranks. We're going off Cam's rankings, then debating. All right, take us through your top 10.
So number one, Danger Forward. Number two, Isaac Heaney. Number three, Devon Smith. Number four, Josh Dunkley. Number five, breaking news because of the Titch situation, Chad Wingard. Number six, Sam Menegola. Number seven, Toby McLean. Number eight, David Mundy. Number nine, Tim Kelly. And number 10, the Hoff.
That's surely Heaney at two's a hot take from Cam Corns. That's huge.
So I think Devon's a star, right? And he has been for years, but I, going back to every year that he's played fantasy well, or scored well in fantasy, he racks up the tackle numbers. Regardless of position, when he was playing that sort of small pressure forward at GWS, he still racked up the tackle numbers. I think it'll be, he will see a probably decline, a very minor decline, and it's enough for me. I actually think Heaney's going to be absolutely massive this year. And so it's enough for me to rank him third instead of second.
Like he led the league in tackles. Led the league.
Yeah, correct. Correct. Oof. But that's when tackles were there to be made. So I think it's a little bit, maybe a different game. It's going to be a bit faster, less tackling.
16-point difference we're talking about here from last year's data. Where do you think Heaney picks up if Devon's just going to have a small drop?
So Heaney will get more ball. In general, he's going to be more around the pill. He sort of played a little bit in that forward line a bit more last year. They don't need him there anymore. I think they're going to try and develop him as a proper full-time mid throughout the year. And again, it's not a 16 differential because it's not just Devon who's going to lose it. I think Devon will probably lose maybe one or two tackles a game. There's your eight, and then probably a couple of possessions for Heaney. And then, yeah, that's where you'll get it. Do I think there's going to be much between them come the end of the season? Probably not.
I will say, I hope people don't talk during the pre-season saying that Heaney or Mills is going to get Hannah's ball, because Hannah's didn't get any of the ball. Let's face facts. So looking at the top 10, there are a few differences that we have. I still feel uncomfortable with Western Bulldogs, so I don't like the Dunkley and McLean scenario. And I've talked through this before because they might both be half-back flankers or back pocketers this year. That is the biggest drama of the Western Bulldogs. But the reality, it was McLean's role until he done his shoulder, then it became Dunkley's role. They're both fit now, so whose role actually is it? And you've got Liberatore coming in. So I feel uncomfortable, but I have them in the same positions, the 4-5 sort of scenario, only because I'm a little bit unsure. I think they'll both score well, but I don't think that they should be considered top tier. So I have three in the top tier, which is Dangerfield, Devon, in that order, and then Heaney. But I would actually put Heaney more likely on top of tier two rather than tier one. I hope I'm wrong, but the reality is I think there's only another strong, confident tier two, and I wouldn't have had him in that situation until Tom Mitchell's gone down, and that's Wingard, because he's probably the one that can really rack up the footy at Hawthorn right now, and I think that's gone from me thinking he was going to be a forward and Cyril's replacement. Now Mitchell's down. Unless there's someone on that list that I don't know about, I probably see Wingard in as an inside midfielder.
No, just a quick point. We do have a bunch of questions came in from Twitter about Chad Wingard and his upside and all that side of things. I think that's about right, Statesman. You bang on. He's going to be probably the guy who gets the midfield time in replacement for Tom Mitchell. And from my perspective, personally, I always saw him as a massive injury risk, right? And so every year I just say, no, I don't want him. He seems to have a hammy every year. And then I've just gone through his stats earlier today. And he actually doesn't miss a whole lot. He's pretty consistent. It's just where he plays. So,
yep.
And I think where he plays will be that mid. Dos, anything?
I think his biggest drama is I don't think he really has the tank.
Oh, wow, really? I think in the second half of last year, he kind of proved that he could maintain a midfield spot there for a bit. He did play in the mid for the second. So for the last 13 games last year, he averaged 92.4. I think early in the season, it was a bit of form, plus that weird just mix of midfielders at Port Adelaide last year, which just really had him struggling. And I think what you said before, Cam, he tends to have 1 year up, 1 year down as well. Just a bit of weird form sort of slumps, and also based on that role, whether he plays forward or mid. But I totally see him now I actually saw him as a mid before the Mitchell injury regardless. I thought he was going to play mostly mid and a little bit forward, sort of that mix. But now, yeah, I'm surprised. I think he's very high in both the rankings. He's top five, top six now for pretty much everyone. And it's crazy that how much did he jump, do you think, with the Tom Mitchell injury? Where was he before the Mitchell injury for you guys?
I think there was a lot of questions about what his role was going to be or the percentage in the midfield. What happened with Tom Mitchell's only firmed up that he's going to get more midfield time than he was originally. So it just made him more into a definite top tenner rather than a fringe top tenner.
Yeah. And one thing I'd like to touch on the other debate you were talking about before with the Toby McLean, Josh Dunkley sort of mixture. So Toby McLean had that shoulder injury, didn't he, in the about halfway through the season. So he was averaging 107 in those first 10 games. Following that, he averaged 84 for the rest of the season. And with Dunkley, it was almost the opposite, averaging 81 in the first half and then 108 in the last 10 games. I think Steve and Jono had the debate a couple of weeks ago about what role everyone's going to take, because they're not the only mids at the Dogs. There's plenty of others there. And I sort of tend to take the side that Toby McLean's role is going to be more of that burst in the mid and playing forward, because he's got the ability to be that small crumbing forward without Dalhouse there now as well. I'd be more confident, and I think based on your rankings you are too, that Josh Dunkley's cemented that spot in the midfield as that big sort of mid. But interesting top 10. Was there any others there you'd like to discuss?
Yeah, so there's a couple that... So Tim Kelly, being a Geelong player, just automatically got put in the top 10. I have him struggling in the top 20, to be honest. And look, there is a bit of an issue there with Geelong players, because there's just a lot of mouths to feed. But I think he's a better player than he is a fantasy player, to be quite honest with you. He's slick, breaks the lines, looks good, is going to get the votes. But I don't think he's going to be a regular one. I'm quite happy to pick the person I've got in place with him in the top 10 and do a trade, Cam, in any draft system, especially in a keeper, in Toby Green. That man's a ball magnet. He's had 1 year out, just one. He is a genuine top five. Because he's missing a bit of the pre-season, I'm just keeping him on the lower end of the top 10. But that guy's a premium, an absolute gun. He can actually average in the 90s while staying in the forward pocket, let alone if he gets loose in the midfield at any time. If Toby Green gets 5% of Dylan Shields, he's an average in 110. I mean, you had to put another Geelong player, a bloke that's only had 5 games, never got near All-Australian. No! Can't even get onto the West Coast list because they don't rate him. They're only going to give him the minimum payment for 2 years. Mate, Toby Green is a gun!
Oh, man. That was...
Oh, geez. I think Statesman dropped out.
Oh, that
and,
is...
I will say you missed out on Buddy Franklin too. I can understand why he's on the fringe of a top 10 these days. But at the end of the day, he's got the record on the board. If he trains more than 20 minutes this year, he should be in the top 10.
I actually, Stato, you're my boy, but I got to disagree with the Tim Kelly's not a fantasy player remark, though. That was his, you know, I know he's a mature ager, but that was his rookie year, and he averaged 95 in his last 12. Your boy, the Heen Dog, who's... in basically just a theoretical fantasy player, averaged 85 in his last 11. What has he done to show us that he gets a 60-point quarter and then ends up on a 90? He's never really shown much. So I
will say that I had to just go hard because Tim Kelly's a Geelong player. But I seriously do have that question mark of who's actually going to get that quality mid-time at Geelong. So I'm not confident that I can put someone like that into a top 10. Yes, he's a good player. In a midfielder, he wouldn't be even considered anywhere near the top 30 or 40. Yes, he should be in the top 30 for forwards. No doubts about that. But he's no Toby Green. He's not a guaranteed top sixer.
So about Toby. So I agree, Toby's a star, right? And he's awesome to watch play. What do you make of him just getting back on the track now?
Yeah, it means he's not in the top five. He's actually just in the top 10 for me. That's where I place him. So he'll start slow, there's no doubts, but his season will just get better and better.
Okay. For me, I don't think he's going to get that mid-time, even if he gets just that 5
minutes.
No,
of course he's not, but he averages in the 90s in the forward pocket, mate.
Well, you know, he gets probably... one of those karate kick marks every game, and so he's probably going to get one less of those because of the rule change. # most significant rule change of the year. But I just don't think he's actually going to be that great this year, to be honest. And I can't wait.
That's all right. That's why we have a You Suck show, mate.
Yeah, it's good to capture that, you know, massive rant. And hey, you're actually still a bit red.
hashtag, it's very hot in here. Hashtag... Cam's greatest hits is the use of that.
Hey, do you guys ever see a scenario where Toby Green does move back in the midfield, just ignoring... is he just too good a forward?
It all depends which list he is. I mean, GWS is a monster. And look, there's people like Jacob Hopper. He'll be the number 2 midfielder at Carlton. And they're talking about which one's going to get that extra time. And because the way they've been set up and letting good players go, getting early draft picks, they just keep on bringing these quality mids in. If Toby Green wants to move to Melbourne, he'll most likely get on a list and be the number one or number two midfielder, and he would just absolutely explode because he is a fantasy gun, and I think we should never lose that and forget it. And I think Cam looked at the averages last year rather than do his research, so I had to let him know.
Mate, I owned him last year. It was the most painful year.
See, this is it. So you own all the Geelong players in your heart, and you own Toby Green during his worst fantasy year, and so therefore I think you've let your emotions go. And I just had to let my emotions go out on you, Cam.
I feel like
and
that,
I am right.
There's definitely one of us who's let the emotions go and displayed it right now, so
Before we get to our next 10 ranks, please drop us a rating and review on whatever podcast format you listen on. We are now on Spotify and Google Play. We're up to 87. A couple more from last week, so let's get to 100 before JLT. Hashtag 100 before JLT. It's a terrible hashtag. That's only February 28th, by the way, so get around it and support the show. All right, Cam, take us through your dream team forward ranks 11 to 20.
So I've got good personality Tom Lynch coming in at 11, followed by Jack Billings at 12, Lance Franklin 13, Walters at 14, Tobes at 15, Christian Petracca at 16, Robbie Gray 17, Jack Gunston 18, Tommy Mack 19, and finally Handsome Tom at 20.
Got any rants for the 11 to 20 statesman?
Yeah, I've got the Toms the other way round, to be honest. Now, I will say I understand Adelaide had a really crap year. We understand that. But I was looking through the information, and we actually find good personality Tom was ranked 41 in averages for forwards this year. Now, totally accept that they didn't have their best year, but also look through his personal information. He's never played 22 rounds in his career, and he's only played twice over 20. He's given us 290 averages and another mid-80s average, and although he's a really good link player and call-up and all that type of stuff, I just don't see him being a tier two, tier three forward. I think he's probably been overinflated because he's had two half decent years, to be honest. The other Tom, I think, has got a huge opportunity to actually really improve, because he's gone from a poor midfield to a great midfield. We all know that data doesn't follow Richmond, so they're one of the worst performed fantasy teams, even though they're one of the best teams. But we've seen Jack Riewoldt shoot up this year to record the best average season he ever has. And I think Handsome Tom has got a great opportunity to do that. So I sort of responded to that information saying one's got a great upside and one's, you know, never really delivered high quality scores for a long period of time or ever played 22 rounds in any one season. So I sort of put them completely different, to be honest. And I think there was one other difference is Robbie Gray. Just from the preseason, I've sort of lifted him up. He's done his practice game playing in the midfield. There used to be the old adage of it was Chad or Robbie Gray. Well, it looks like Robbie Gray's got his one chance to be the main dog in the midfield. So I've moved him up to be in 12th position, and he might be shooting even further up depending on how the JLT goes.
I think that's pretty interesting around Robbie Gray as well. Brad Ebert was playing in the forward line.
Yeah.
Brad Ebert. I mean, dual position tempter, maybe for a little bit later. It's not too bad. But I just
This is a practice match. Like I play in the guts in some of my practice matches, and I'm a back pocket. Like I don't think that practice matches should be taken too seriously. Robbie Gray has his body just. I don't think he could last a full year in the midfield. I'd be worried at 30 years old. I'd love to see it because he is a fantasy jet. But yeah, Statesman, you got a bit more on this.
He's the best midfielder they've got, so they've got to have him there. Obviously, they need to manage the body. There's one other one you've missed out too that I just clearly have in the top 20, and I've ranked him as number 13, and that's Blake Akers for massive breakout this year. We saw him for the first 7 rounds, which put my fantasy team well and truly on track to be in that top 100. Averaging in the 90s, by far and away the best performed St Kilda player early in the season. And I see that continuing next year. We're expecting the breakout. Did have the injury affected game, which slowed him down. We understand that. But he is ready for a massive breakout. I wanted to put him in the top 10. There's probably not enough data to push his way in there. But Blake Akers for a massive breakout for me.
So I'll do a comparison between Akers and good personality Tom, because I think you've maybe undersold the potential of the King of the Link in good personality. So he...
King of the Link.
Let me go through 2015 through to last year, right? So you said only 2 seasons over 20. So it was 21, 21, 20, and then last year 17, which I think is actually pretty good. And for those years, so
it was 17 the year that was good.
So
it was pretty good.
He's
17
had,
games, pretty good.
Was the worst. So he had 88.6, followed by 90.3, followed by 90.8, and then coinciding with Adelaide Crows just a terrible year, he went 79.8, right? If he can go back to 90.8, that's easily a top 12 mid, top 12
yeah,
forward rather.
I just don't see any upside from what he's done in the best season possible. I only see downsides. The actual rule changes aren't going to help a link-out player.
I think they will.
Link-out player.
I absolutely think they will. So my whole positioning with this is that more athletic players are going to score very well, and taller players are going to score a lot more freewheeling marks than most of the players on the field. He's already doing the same role that the game is about to move towards suiting. I think that for him is upside. And that being said, even if he gets just back to 90, oh, dang, he just got 90. And you probably got him at your third forward. That's pretty darn good.
I think with the... And I know the setup's only for when it's going to be bounced in the centre. So it's not as if it's happening a lot. But I think those rules actually help the quick players, not the ones with the tank.
Cool.
Hey, talking just in terms of that zone, something we may... I don't think it's a huge thing as well, but talking about defensively and the setups there that they've got with the zones for defenders, do you think... We're talking about how many... Obviously, it's a huge thing, the kickouts, but do you think intercept possessions go significantly down with the fact you're probably not going to be able to play that extra loose behind the play a lot of the time with the setups in the centre?
It's an unknown.
Because, of the big things West Coast would do is put Jeremy McGovern behind the play. You can still do that, but he's going to now have a man every time anyway. It's just something I've thought of recently that I've... Was surprised at. Okay, Tom McDonald, pretty low for both of you guys. I think Steve has him in his top 10. I have him at number 10. Talk me through why he's so low with the thinking behind Tom Lynch there, Statesman.
Yeah, firstly, I have an issue with anyone that's in key position that hasn't got the initials Lance Franklin. Secondly, is that now Hogan has left... Someone has to demand the best backman, the most defensive backman, and that's T-Mac. So it actually might help his super coach points, because any time he's going to do anything, he's actually going to actually have a contested mark rather than a non-contested one. But I think it'll hurt his AFL fantasy scoring.
Okay.
I don't want to do it, but I'm agreeing with Statesman. Yeah. I don't want to do it, but it feels dirty. I'm going to go shower.
It feels dirty.
Yeah, I like him. I disagree with both of you. Let's go. Oh, unless has anyone else got any more on the 11 through 20 range, or should we move through to 21 to 30?
I want to pick apart Akers, sorry. Like,
yep, go for it.
13! Mate, is he best 22?
Oh, wow.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
You sure?
Surely. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Can he play, yeah, no, can he play 22 or 23 games?
Absolutely he can. There obviously is the right opportunity needs to pop up for him, but I think it's there, and I think he showed at the beginning of 2018 that he's clearly one of the players that are going to step up for him, and they need to back in their future, and that's Blake Akers. He's a star, easily in their top 22.
I love Akers. Their midfield mix is so interesting, though, and I think one thing that's very underrated in terms of calling Blake Akers so high as you, Alan Richardson factor is going to be huge for every Saint. It's just so hard to rank them. All right, let's go through 21 to 30, Cam.
Okay, so 21, I've got the Fortnite extraordinaire Mitch Robinson. Mr. Boak at number 22. Statesman's boy Partiff at number 23. Jack Martin, 24. Hogan at 25. Jeremy Cameron at 26. 27 will be Darcy Parrish, 28, Jack Zeeble, 29, Jordan Degooy, and Mr. Warple at 30.
Why no love for the Geelong full forward?
I think last year, and this was hard for me, right? So I'm sitting there the whole time, and I'm like, mate, I'm looking at these rankings, I see Statesmans, I see Steves, I see Jono, I can't see Jono's, but I see across the board, and everyone's got Mr. Hawkins in there, and I genuinely think last year was an outlier, unfortunately. I don't think he can back it up. He hasn't proven, with the exception of last year, that he can do it. And he's 31 this year. So I just don't... I think that might have been his almost last hurrah as far as a fantasy perspective goes. Probably still going to be a pretty good key forward, but yeah, not a fantasy scorer.
Yeah, it's almost like that fluke rule I was talking about a few weeks ago with the basketball terminology. A career high at age 30, 8.6 points better than he's ever scored. And in the first half of the season was only going at 67 a game for the first 9 games following, and then 97 for the last 12. I don't know. I'd probably agree with you, Cam, that there's regression, massive regression. Not massive, I think a little bit of regression inbound, but the rule changes as well could be helping. He's one of the ones that rule changes kind of help. We don't know. I don't think... You guys tend to think that the rule changes aren't a big factor for this sort of forward compared... Obviously, defense is huge, but what are you guys not really that big on the rule changes as forwards?
There is a possibility, as you were talking about the loose man in defense. They're still going to be played, but they need to be smarter how they build it in. But there's going to be more opportunities for smart and quick forwards to get extra possessions.
Well, in that case, why is Jordan Degooy so low? Because he's a power forward that is quick, fast, and just can nail a bunch of goals. He could be pretty high. He's at 14 for me at the moment, because we're talking about how Toby Green's such a good player. He's a similar sort of ilk up the forward line, and that was sort of... He's only age 23 season. I feel like he's still got untapped potential as a forward that can score, not the fact that we know that he's not going to be playing a lot of mid with how stacked they are in the midfield. I think he can score right up forward.
Has he still got a dog?
Oh, didn't he blame it on the broken hand or something?
Well, see, if he doesn't have the dog anymore, then I'm more secure that he's going to play 22 rounds.
Okay.
And I think that's been his problem, is he finds way to have little breaks. Like Heathy Shaw, he used to just find a way to have a month off. But look, there is the possibility, and I reckon we saw the best of him late in the year. And if he's playing that type of role, yes, he's going to get you some tons, but he's going to have some days that are only 30s, 40s and 50s. So when that averages out, it doesn't look really pretty. I've still got him in the top 30. I've got him at 27. I like him, but while he hasn't got much midfield mix coming, and you can totally understand why he's not going to get midfield time at Collingwood, He's just going to be a little bit unreliable on a week-to-week basis.
Okay. I think they can use him as that person that plays out of the square, just as a massive mismatch. And with the amount of elite talent they have in the guts, I think he can go off for massive bags during the year. So I'm pretty high on Dugowie, and I think he will slide because of the fact people are thinking, oh, no mid-time now, he's not going to score. I think he'll kick bags, to be honest. Yeah, Cam.
I think he'll kick bags, but I think they'll be few and far between. You've basically, whilst he's more powerful than the rest of the forward line, you've still got Jaden Stephenson and you've still got old mate Will Hoskin-Elliott there as well, right? And they're basically leaner versions of a Dugowie. I think that if you're kicking to a forward line that has Mason Cox and those three, first of all, you're pretty happy as a midfielder because you're probably they're going to bring down a mark. But secondly, you know, you've got a wide spread of talent, and as far as Statesman would say, too many mouths to feed for too much.
Yeah, have we got anything else on the 21 to 30 range there?
Yeah, I found it really hard, and this is going back into the teens, of deciding where CP should be, because I'm waiting for a massive breakout. And I think it's going to come. We only have to look at Dangerfield, that he used to be a trap in fantasy world for a long period of time, and then just one day turned it on. CP's that type of quality. And yes, he's a burst player, and people have likened him to the Dusty Martin co. One day it's really going to switch on. So I found it really hard. Expecting a breakout is going to come, but unsure when it's going to come. So he made it sort of mid-teams for everyone, but he could be top 10 and he could be 35.
And Statesman, I don't know about you, but I genuinely have no confidence in where I've ranked him. None. Like,
yeah, agreed.
You know, he's sitting at 16 for me, and I seriously, it's almost as if I just want to put him there so I don't look stupid either way. Because
yeah, I was a bit the same.
Yeah, because he could seriously be a top five forward if he has that breakout year, or he could be, you know, 70 average, and you just think, oh, putrid.
Is that why you ranked Toby Green at 15? You didn't want to look stupid?
No, that one's because I knew he was going to be about the 15th best.
Right.
Now, Trav Boakes, both, I think he's pretty low on both your radars. That's because you're predicting a lot more forward time this year. Could he be a potential bargain if it doesn't pan out that way? I still think he's, you know, got some minutes in the legs. Only 30 years old. I feel like we think he's older because he's just been around forever and been the captain for ages now. It's like, I feel like he might actually potentially be a bargain this year should he get a bit of mid-rotations. But I suppose they've got so many mouths to feed, as we've said a few times, that he might have to be the one that goes forward if your boy Robbie Gray ends up playing a majority mid-time, like you're saying, Statesman.
Yeah, I totally agree. Boak's going to be a bit of value. Parrish may be value. We're unsure. But I think a few people are hesitant, so Dylan Shield comes in. I think you're going to find Kane Lambert's going to be great value this year, and it's because he had a slow start to the season last year. So he might be worth an absolute bundle, but not get picked up until, I would say, in the 20s, round 20 or so. And I think there's going to be a few others. We don't know what's going to happen with Warpaw. I think we both got him around that sort of frame, but are we pumping him up too much? And as you heard, there's a few comments there, and I think Petrarca could be great value. Toby Green could be great value, and I think Robbie Gray, because of his year, could be fantastic value. So there's a bit of value in that forward line, and there's some risk up the top because we don't know what roles are going to happen. So if you play your forwards smartly, you might get some real bargains deep and late.
Just on that as well, like, to go through names that we didn't see. So Lambert's a really good call out there. I think he's going to be potentially really good value late. Charlie Kerner could have a pretty good season. He was quite good for at least half the season last year, and I expect him to improve. Mr. Gresham from St Kilda, I'd suggest he's going to have a bit of a bumper year, and you could potentially get him quite late. And one that is sort of, Steve, you mentioned him on Twitter, but he's sort of there or thereabouts most years, and you'd call him a forward five most years. Mitch Wallace. Like he could depending on how the Dogs roll out, he may play the in and under. We just don't know.
One thing as well I'd like to touch on, a man that's left the kennel. I swear this is a while ago now, Cam. Did you not make the bold call he'd average over some ridiculous margin, yet he hasn't cracked your top 30? What was that call again? Do you recall that?
So it was definitely Dalhouse at 85, and I owe Statesman a sixer of Pinots if it doesn't happen. I haven't put him in my top 30.
I'll accept the Pinots right now, buddy.
That's all right. I think you can just wait, because he actually sits at my number 31 as I quickly type that in here. Brilliant. Yep, so he's 31, and I just want to see what happens there. It was a bold prediction. I thought that Tim Kelly was going to be leaving. Tim Kelly definitely stayed, and it makes my face a little bit almost as red as Statesman's before.
And I will say that position 31 in averages and forwards last year was Mitch Wallace, who was 82.1. So if he does come in at 31, it's going to be reasonably tight, Cam.
on Dalhouse as well, I suddenly got a bit of faith the other day, because in my huge Bailey Williams at 9 or whatever it was last week call, I went back and I looked up some highlights of that best game where he played in the midfield. And I tell you what, there was another guy that was featured prominently on the highlight reel, and it was your very own Dalhouse there, and he was looking sensational. I was like, ooh, maybe Cam's got a point. And then I was like, nah, maybe he doesn't. All right, so is there any other names for this potential breakout sort of candidates, or, you know, people, any smokies on the radar for either of you there?
I've picked out a couple just to keep a watch on. They probably don't get drafted, but they may feature in some sort of hashtag off-brand classic teams. But Jack Higgins is one to look for. So he's been talked up to have a little bit more midfield time at the Tigers. Josh Battle, I think, is a very, very good player out at St Kilda. Mr. Setterfield at Carlton. Paddy Dow and Zach Fisher as well. Depending on how they do that midfield mix at Carlton, I think you might see some value in the sort of 80 to 82 range from one or multiple of those. And then finally, Big Joe Danaher. He is not mentioned in our top 30. He's still recovering. And he'll probably still be recovering until, you know, round 5 or 6. Might hit his straps in round 10-ish. But then you might get a really good back half of the season for someone that you picked up off the waiver.
We do have a question from Steve, because obviously we share our rankings together. Doss doesn't share his, but the experts do. And he did ask the question of, how can you guys love Walters so much when we've seen him tried a few times in the midfield and he doesn't hold up across the season? Now, I ranked him at 17, but Cam, you ranked him at 14. What's your response for Steve?
So when he does play in the midfield, he scores massively, right? And so he's one of those players, and from a forward in that range, I sort of look for that risk reward. And so it's I'm okay with getting a few 60s if I'm going to balance that out with a 150 every now and then. And that's something that Michael Walters can do when he's in the mid. His body, however, and I think that's more to Steve's point, that his body just does not hold up. Let me go through some numbers here for you. So I'll go from 2011, because it gets worse the further you go back. But 2011, 3 games. 2012, 8 games. 2013, 8 games. 2014, 6 games, right? That's the bad news. The good news is that from 2015, it's 20, 22, 17, and 18. And that for me is sort of right in the sweet spot of okay. Like, if he misses 5 games a year, plays in the guts, and is scoring 100 per game, that's brilliant. That's really good value. I'm big on him. And again, 87, like, if he's going to pump out a 150 every now and then, lock him in.
And the difference between our positioning with Walters is I just have 3 more in front, being Robbie Gray, Handsome Tom, and Blake Akers. So they're the 3 that make the difference from the 14 to the 17.
One guy from Fremantle as well that probably shouldn't feature on a draft podcast, but I really want to speak about his early season last year, is Matty Taberner. I think Rory Lobb coming there might destroy any potential value. But that start of the season last year, he came out of the blocks 90, 90, 79, 74, and then he got injured. But I really liked that role that he had, and he looked so good early, and I'm just disappointed that potentially he doesn't get that role that I wanted, and obviously he's probably going to go undrafted anyway, but yeah, Statesman.
Hashtag keep to the hosting.
Yeah, is that okay, fair enough. Somebody that finished the season hot and isn't mentioned here as well is the West Coastian, Jamie Cripps, and another West Coastian that had a fire second half of the year is Jack Darling. Well, actually, a fire start to the year and a rancid second half of the year. Is it either of those two tempting for you guys?
Yeah, it was. So Jack Darling was in the borderline for me a couple of times. So after he had that hot patch, he was averaging about the 85 mark, which does look pretty good. Had a couple of injury affected, which dropped it away. But then he trailed away, and you look at it, and he's averaging in the 70s again. So that's his best year that he's ever had. So you look at it and just say, well, you just avoid his late value. And if he gets on a hot streak, that's fantastic. Cripps, his average was sensational last year. Started slowly, really picked up as the season went. I've owned him a couple of times in draft because he gets on a roll and starts performing well, but he can go missing too. So I've been burnt by Cripps, I reckon, three or four times. So I've just put him away and go, yep, you can have a good time. West Coast are premiers. He was playing effectively in one of the top two teams in the year as a small forward and got the crumbs from JJ and Darling. At the end of the day, I just can't see that being repeated again to that level.
Yeah.
It's the same with me. Like, I've got Cripps and Bruce sort of in the same area, whereby they had, like, a really good spell, probably a really good season, and I just don't... We see it so often where people just don't back up, and that's what I'm expecting from both.
One more thing. Is Caleb Daniel eligible as a forward this year, or did that change?
So I think he is. Based on this list, I could be
not completely wrong. Not tempting at all with you guys?
I don't know if he's best 22 anymore.
Caleb Daniel, really?
Yeah, I really like Caleb Daniel.
I think his elite disposal will be greatly effective in the new setups where he doesn't have to worry too much about, you know, the mismatches. I think he'll be great.
Which club?
Yeah, okay. Luke Beveridge.
Enough said.
Yeah. All right, fair enough. Let's get to the questions from social media. You can find us at The Draft Doctors on Twitter or The Draft Doctors on Facebook. Cam is at The Potato Bake. The Statesman is at Statesman33. And I'm at HKDOS. Let's get to the first of the questions here. And it comes from Dane. What are your thoughts on Tom Lynch? So I think we've already gone through this, but he wants a predicted average. Do you think he's probably talking about Handsome Tom? And also, do you think Billings will be true to his word and actually prove himself this year? Cheers, lads.
So Handsome Tom, I'll take about an 85. Would be pretty reasonable for him. He can probably go a lot bigger, and I think that's a little bit conservative. I'm not big on him, and I won't be drafting him. He's actually in my do not draft pile, which is quite controversial, but... I'm strict in regards to key forwards and people that I like. So he's gone. And from a Billings perspective, will he step up? I've got him high enough to say that he will. Like, in my list, I think he will. Does that mean... What he actually meant by those comments was, I'm going to be in the midfield more. And I don't necessarily think that's it, but I think he's going to score well for fantasy.
I would have thought last year with the expectations for Billings that everyone would have had him in the top 6 to 10. We've all got him on that sort of mid-range teens, and I think that's where he probably is, to be fair. Handsome Tom will be my preferred vice-captain for round one.
Could I also just say quickly, mentioning Tom Lynch, so I'm assuming based on the fact Rewalt remains unranked for both of you, you think he takes just the points to make Rewalt absolutely irrelevant this year?
Well, I will say that he looked pretty last year in the average, but he did score 200 points in Supercoach and 190 in Dream Team against the Gold Coast, which does help lift that average a little bit. But he normally would average in the 70s. So that you're talking that's a, you know, that's an F5 and a bench forward. So that's where I think he remains. And all of a sudden, you think probably the main focus will be Handsome Tom.
Yeah. Dane also wants to know about Sam Menegola. We talked about a few Cats players. He's just in the top 10, but haven't really talked much about him. You think he's still going to be backing it up this year?
Yeah, I've got to say that Cats are third in this list, but there's the Bulldogs that worry me, there's Port Adelaide that worries me, and then there's Geelong that worries me. And it's actually all about the role. So I looked last year, Geelong recruited really well. Obviously, they come in with a mature rookie, but also get Gary Ablett. That really affected Mitch Duncan. So he went from 110 to a high 90s averaging midfielder. And I'm just worried how it all pans out, how it all sits, and who's actually best 22, who gets the percentage. Are we going to get to the point where we're looking at an Ollie Wines and Tom Mitchell model where they're, you know, quality midfielders getting 71% game time? I'm sort of really worried about that. So I kept him ranked, I think, 7, so I remain him in the top 10, but it's not full of confidence, I will be honest.
Yeah, definitely. In a startup keeper league, Dan asks, where would you draft DeGoey and Wingard? Now, you're a keeper league expert statesman. What are your thoughts there?
Well, just on scoring potential, Wingard comes first. And what you don't know is what's happening in the future with your position. So if Wingard goes in the midfield, you might be rolling in and he's just a midfielder only the following year. I think you've got the long-term guarantee that DeGoey, although he might get some midfield time, I think he's going to be a forward status person for a long period of time. So if you're going for a premiership, it's Wingard. If you're looking for the future, you go DeGoey. And if you're looking for the balance of two, it just depends on where you're situated in your draft, to be honest.
And I guess from a keeper perspective, if you're just starting out, and I'm pretty new to keeper, right? But why wouldn't you be drafting to win the first year anyway?
Yeah, but it all depends how your early draft's gone.
Yeah, okay.
So if you pick Tom Mitchell in the first round, but you pick him at pick 12, then you're planning for the longer term, aren't you?
Yeah.
So do you knock back a Mitchell when he's sitting there right in front of you, or do you knock back a Doherty at round 8?
Mm. And the comment was more, so, because I think DeGoey, like, so we've ranked him around 27 to 29 for our year draft, but I would suggest he'd be much higher for a keeper draft.
Yeah, totally agree.
Now, speaking back to single season, how high could Wingard go after Titch's injury, and could he be overvalued, asks 17.7.
Of course he could. My immediate reaction when he got picked up was, I reckon Hawthorn recruit for roles. Now, I immediately took that he was a serial replacement. And I'm only assuming there's a change of thought now, because he can play really good inside midfield, that he takes that role. If that's not the case and he only plays deep forward and plays a serial type role, so get 13 possessions and make them worthwhile, then we've ranked him way too high. But I just don't see it happening at the moment.
Hypothetical statesman and DOS. Wingard rolls out in JLT in the forward line. What do you do?
Yeah, you probably... I'd still back him in. I think Clarko might play some mind games like that. It wouldn't surprise me. But I'd still back him in to be playing midfield. He won't stay there all year as a forward. And if he does move into the midfield, which he surely, I'd keep him the same personally. What about you, Statesman?
Yeah, I probably would.
Okay, cool. Yep.
We Got Big Cox asks, Josh Shackey, any relevance going forward in a keeper league, or should I stock with Stringer?
I thought this man was banned from asking questions for any of our podcasts. He beat me in a final 2.5 years ago, and I haven't forgiven him, so let's move on to the next question.
All right then, sorry, I'm new to this. I didn't know we'd put a ban on We Got Big Cock. Sorry, buddy, we won't be answering this question tonight. AJ asks, no, somebody, come on, we forgive.
Yeah, Yeah, I think you look at someone else outside both Stringer and Chucky, to be honest. Cam?
If I'm choosing between the two, it'd be Stringer, just to see what his role is this year, because I have no idea. After last year, when they tried him in the mid and he sort of flailed a little bit, I'd like to see what they do with him this year.
Isn't that just clear now? You bring in Shiel, Smith proved himself. You got McGrath to graduate through. You got Parrish to graduate through. Stringer through the midfield is no longer to be seen.
I think it's a line through it. But it doesn't mean that he's not going to potentially pinch hit, and it could benefit his scores with Shiel and McGrath developing anyway. So I think there's potential value there. But
if it's a deep keeper league, I still like Shacky. If it's like a long-term plan that sort of having Shacky, I think Shacky will still be pretty good in a few years. I think it's going to take him some time, but he's shown some flashes. I think he will be a good scorer. And Stringer, yeah, I think Stringer's sort of the Stringer experiment. Good player up forward, but won't be relevant fantasy-wise. Shacky has a chance, in my opinion. But.
So you've now picked Bailey Williams for your defence, your D1, Shacky for your F1. Who was it before?
Yeah, I do have a bit of love for the Dogs, to be honest. I just think their list management is really, really good. And yeah, like you're missing the ruck as well, the young ruckman. Tim English. They've just got such a good team. I think they have an awesome team. I really, maybe I am overrating them. They've got Luke Beveridge, who is not a good for fantasy coaches, but I think he's an awesome coach. And yeah, sorry, a bit of, I don't even go for the Dogs. So I don't know. I just really like their list.
No, I don't get me wrong. I think the players are fantastic. What I'm always concerned with what role they're going to play this week.
Yeah. No, that's fair. I mean, Shacky's He's his role, though, if you're talking about purely Shacky, his role is pretty solid, isn't it? Just full forward, centre half forward. It's not going to change too much. Anyway, AJ, of the top forwards, who is actually going to stay a forward? Hashtag Keeper League question. Another Keeper League question. Statesman, have you got anything on that?
Well, Dangerfield and Devon, you think, would lose. Heaney's got the potential. Dunkley will lose. Menegola, we have no idea. Wingard would lose. McLean would lose. T-Mac remains, but I don't have him anywhere near the top end. So I think we're starting to seriously look at the Billings. So there you go. Billings on a long-term thing is probably the one that I think is going to retain. Petrarca, I think, was always going to be the mixture. And, of course, the most important person we should be talking about, Toby Green is your number one keeper forward. Lock it in. There you go, Cam.
I love that we can just cut that and play it on every year's You Suck show for the next, like, 10 years. It's brilliant.
Okay, Kyle asks, are we worried about Dunkley's role this season, or do we just select him because FOMO... and the points we could lose?
So for me, I've got draft one, I'm taking Dangerfield, right? I've been pretty open with that. And so I don't have to deal with forwards for probably the next couple of rounds. I don't want any part of picking between Dunkley and McLean, and even Devon. Like, I'm pretty keen to stay away from that entire selection conundrum. Statesman, what do you got?
Well, this is the issue. So you don't get that number one draft pick and you don't get the top three picks. So now Tom Mitchell, your voodoo doll stuff, has got rid of him. Then Danger's probably in the top three for most leagues. Would that be fair? So he's got the 120 potential and he's a forward. So why not have him? So you've got draft pick number six. Now, I dare say that's going to be used on a Josh Kelly. So coming back, you're at 18-19. So you've got to make a decision whether I'm going another mid, I'm going a defender, or I'm going a forward. Dangerfield's gone. So who are you taking at pick 18?
So you know what? I'll flip that on its head a little bit, and it's probably no one from this list. Because the right pick for me is a defender next. And so I actually think I will get back. If I was, say, pick six, I would see the entire forward list down through to Mundy, who I've got at eight, gone by the time I pick a forward. Because I'm wasting my picks on a defender instead.
Well, so your F1 by your rankings could actually be two of the best F1s around, Robbie Gray and Toby Green.
That's the value that will exist further down. But Toby Green at 15, right?
Yeah, I'm just looking at your list. So that it's, by the time you go around to picking a Ford, if there are still available, that's who you might be able to pick up.
Yep, correct.
So that looks sustainable for me. There's risk if your F1, you know, is at round 5 or 6, but that's where your potential is. That doesn't sound too bad to me. I mean, Petrarca might be in that mix too, which could be a breakout. And I can guarantee you Blake Acres still sitting around 6 as well.
Yeah, correct. And whereas I think everyone sort of predicted the upside for defenders, and there'll be a defender rush in most leagues pretty early on.
True.
But realistically, you're going to have some pretty good value to pick from in third and fourth round for forwards.
And I tell you, there's so much risk. I look at that top 10. Dangerfield, I'm absolutely happy with. Devin Smith, there will be a small downturn. Heaney could pump out exactly the same as he has the last couple of years if they need him to stay up forward, because I don't think they've solved their forward woes yet. There's risk with Dunkley, Menegola, Wingard, McLean, all with roles. And they're all F1 choices. They're all Tier 1 and Tier 2 forwards.
And so the question is, why bother? And so let someone else make that call in your league and then go from there where it's a bit more certain is where I'm going at.
So hashtag screw forwards.
All right, I'm back. I've finished Googling FOMO. It means fear of missing out. I did not know that. I'm back. So I'm happy to clear that up. Kyle also asks here, will Devin still average that 100+ as he will still get high tackle numbers and will he get similar midfield time? We already discussed this one, I think. We think he will. Well, Cam actually doesn't think he'll get the high as tackle numbers this year, because you don't think there'll be as many available.
Yeah, in 2 words.
No matter what, Shiel impacts the midfield. We don't know how, but he impacts the midfield.
So two potential changes to Devin's scoring, right? So Shiel and drop in tackle, but I think his midfield time will stay exactly the same.
He's going 100 plus.
Yep.
If you've won some flags, would you offer up Franklin for Doherty this year? Must be a keeper league again, Statesman.
I'm not against it. But once you've done your second knee, especially when it's back to back, that's a long term reward, and things need to go your way. Cam, you're more into the injuries, but I'd be concerned now.
Yeah, I'd be concerned. My initial thought was absolutely lock it in, and then my second thought was, so he does another one. You know, like there is so much data that supports a re-injure of an ACL. Why bother taking the risk? I would offer Franklin up, but for someone else. Like, let him bait out a Jack Billings or a something that's going to last you a few more years.
I reckon that's when you go a Parrish. Because I reckon he pays off long term.
Yep, agreed.
All right, Jake asks, who will average more out of Wingard and Billings in fantasy? So you both have Wingard above Billings in your rankings, so I guess we'll just go Wingard more than Billings this year. Do you guys, well, it leads on to another question, I think, about, oh, that was We Got Big Cocks. Pull out your crystal balls and tell us if Billings is going to be a spud or not. But we're not allowed to answer his question, but are we going to do it anyway?
Yeah, he's not going to be a spud. We had a lot of high expectations. He did not deliver. There's no doubts about that. I just think we needed to temper our expectations a little bit. He's a mid-range. He's that sort of mid-teens type of forward, but he's going to retain that forward status for a long period of time. And if the Saints do get better, I think he'll become a better scorer. That's a big if.
What's his best position, in your opinion?
Half forward flank.
Really? Okay. I think wing slash a bit through the middle is actually where he should be playing. But
that's where he plays for a fantasy, or from a fantasy perspective, but his best position, is half forward flank.
Okay, in a good team.
Very, very good there.
Yeah, fair enough, yes. Mitch Robinson and Jack Billings, any thoughts on these two? We've talked about Jack Billings. Quickly, Mitch Robinson, thoughts?
Yeah, a little bit concerned. we know Beams is gone, but you bring in Lachie Neale, you bring in Jared Lyons, you got a lot of developing quality mids. There's even some quality mids that aren't getting game time with them. So I don't know where Mitch sits. I think he'll get time. I think he'll play mainly defensive roles, whether that's a forward defensive role, whether that's a bit in the midfield as an inside, but a tagging midfielder. He's your grump man. As they get better, they'll go for more and more quality.
Lock him in for a really unsexy 85 every week.
Wow.
All right. So finishing off, talking forwards in this episode, one thing you're looking forward to fantasy related this year and one thing you're looking forward to non-fantasy related. Mine, fantasy related, DT Talk Live in Melbourne, making the journey to have a few beers with the lads. Statesman, are you coming or are you dogging the boys?
I don't know.
Dogging the boys.
My duties have me interstate, but not the state that you boys are going to be. So I'll wait and see how that pans out because my return trip might create the option. So we'll wait to see how that goes. But I would have gone, no doubt I would have confirmed already if I didn't know Cam was going. and my fantasy-related thing that I'm looking forward to is receiving the Pinots from Cam, and my non-fantasy related is drinking the Pinots with Mrs. Statesman out on our deck.
Mate, I'll tell you what, I'm going to send you a sixer of clean skins and you're going to be real happy with those. Yeah. So I'll say I'm actually pumped for DT Live as well, Doss. Really, really looking forward to it. It was a good night last time round, and good to see what the boys pull up this time round. Grundy was there last time, and he is way taller than you'd expect, even though he's very tall, and you would expect him to be tall. Massive. And from a fantasy perspective, I'm backing up a two-peat. So I'm going into my league for a three-peat this year.
Good luck.
Right. Yeah, thank you.
Fantastic stuff. My non-fantasy related is that Panda Bear, one of my favourite musicians, dropping a new album in February. I actually thought I was going to steal Statesman one there. He's a massive fan of Panda Bear. So anyway, thanks for listening to the Draft Doctors podcast. Check out the Soup Coach pod with Steve and Jono and drop us that rating and review. Let's get it up to 100.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Draft Doctors podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and review.